Every science fiction geek has to start somewhere. For me and for many, many others, possibly even Stephen Colbert, it started with Ray Bradbury, who died this week at 91.
Ray Bradbury's work introduced us to fantastic far-off worlds and bizarre futures. And yet in his work, nothing was stranger than what he found hidden in the human mind. So tonight, I want to honor his memory in a way I'm sure he would appreciate by burning this copy of Fahrenheit 451.
Science fiction, once a denigrated genre, is denigrated no more by knowledgeable readers, and it's so wide-ranging it hardly qualifies as a genre, especially as rendered by Bradbury. His Dandelion Wine was an elegy, his Martian Chronicles an allegory, his most famous book, Fahrenheit 451, was that bluntest of literary objects, a cautionary tale about a future where firemen burn books.
Tell me, why do you burn books?
Well, it's a job like any other. Good work, with lots of variety. Monday we burn Miller, Tuesday Tolstoy, Wednesday Walt Whitman, Friday Faulkner, and Saturday and Sunday Schopenhauer and Sartre.
Bradbury long contended in interviews that Fahrenheit 451 never was about government censorship. His fear was that TV and even radio would kill books, shrink our attention span, damage our relationships. In the book, fireman Guy Montag describes his wife, Mildred, stretched out on the bed, quote, like a body displayed on the lid of the tomb, her eyes fixed in the ceiling by invisible threads of steel, immovable. And in her ears, the little seashells, the thimble radios tamped tight, and an electronic ocean of sound, of music and talk coming in on the shore of her unsleeping mind. Every night, the waves came in and bore her off on their great tides of sound, floating her wide-eyed toward morning. And yet, despite Bradbury's claim that he feared people and machines more than the government when it came to the real or metaphorical burning of books, he said in many interviews that state censorship was very much on his mind.
When I was 15 years old, Hitler burned books in the streets of Berlin. And it terrified me because I was a librarian and he was touching my life. All those great plays, all that great poetry, all those wonderful essays, all those great philosophers. So it became very personal.
Perhaps Bradbury's censorship worries receded as our devices proliferated, because he insisted that that was the real problem. As he told the LA Times in 2010, we have too many cell phones. We've got too many internets. We have to get rid of those machines. In 2009, he told Yahoo, who wanted to make an e-book of Fahrenheit 451, to, quote, go to hell. It reminds me of what another great science fiction writer, Douglas Adams, once observed. He said, anything that is in the world when you were born is normal and ordinary and is just a natural part of the way the world works. Anything invented after you're 35 is against the natural order of things. Bradbury's great talent was to project the human mind and heart into a strange future and imagine how they would fare. For Bradbury, it seemed technology defined the strange future. He used to say, I don't try to describe the future, I try to prevent it. A failure of the imagination? Well, he was only human. In the end, he had to submit to an e-book and to the competing interpretations of Fahrenheit 451. But those were small concessions in a life so well-lived and so well-loved, even as he projected himself into a future without Ray Bradbury.
Here lies Ray Bradbury, who loved life completely.
What am I saying? He'll be there. In the books he feared were dying. They're not.
We are all the sons and the daughters of time. So I thank the universe for making life on Earth and allowing me to come alive here.
She packed my bags last night, pre-flight. 0 hour, 9 a.m. And I'm gonna be high as a kite by then.
Rocket Man, by Elton John and Bernie Taupin, was apparently inspired by Bradbury's short story, The Rocket Man.
So much, I miss my wife.
Ray Bradbury died this week at 91.
It's lonely out in space on such a timeless flight.
That's it for this week's show. On the Media was produced by Jamie York, Alex Goldman, TJ Vogt, Sarah Dorfman, and Chris Neary, with more help from Eliza Novick-Smith and Amy DePiro. And our show was edited this week by senior producer Katya Rogers and Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineer this week was Andrew Dunn.
Ellen Horn is WNYC's Senior Director of National Programs. Bassist composer Ben Allison wrote our theme. On the Media is produced by WNYC and distributed by NPR. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. Brooke, you're off to Mexico.
Yep, we're going to be reporting on the state of the Mexican media. And listeners, you'll be able to follow it all on our blog. So go to onthemedia.org to check it out.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Gracias, Bob.
Support for On the Media comes from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, the Ford Foundation, the Jane Marcher Foundation, the Overbrook Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio. This is NPR.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.